Our gospel lesson this morning is from Mark chapter 7. Now when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, they noticed that some of his disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, thus observing the traditions of their elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless it's been washed. There are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups and pots and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and scribes asked Jesus, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" And he said to them, "Isaiah prophesies rightly about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines. You abandon the commandments of God and hold to human traditions.'" Then he asked the crowd again, and he called the crowd again and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside of the body that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. For it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come: fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile the person." What Jesus is talking about is the time-honored traditions that may have made sense at one time, but maybe are nonsense now. A case of, we've always done it that way, so we should continue. Change is not good. This lesson from Jesus reminds me of a story of about a newlywed couple who were going to host Easter dinner for the family and do it at their house. The young bride was busy in the kitchen preparing side dishes when her husband walked in and asked if there was anything he could help her with. And she replied, "Yes, you may prepare the ham for roasting. Cut 1 inch off the heel and 1 inch off the toe, and then put a cup of beef broth in the roaster," and she said, "I'll take it from there." He said, "Okay, I can do that, but why 1 inch off of each end?" And she said, "Because that's the way to roast the ham." He said, "Okay, but why?" She said, "Because that's what my mother taught me to do. So call her and ask her." So he did. Called mother-in-law and told her what was going on, and she said she agreed 100% that that's how you taught to roast a ham. When he asked her why, she said, "I don't know. Call my mother and ask her." So he did, and this time he went right to the why question. And grandmother replied with a chuckle, said, "Well, that's a simple one to answer. I've never had a roasting pan big enough to hold a full-size ham." There are some time-honored traditions from people who are interpreting Bible passages incorrectly, and then they believe that they have passed on to generation to generation. And here's an example of a biblical misinterpretation. I'm sure you've heard the Bible-thumping evangelists say that homosexuality is an abomination to the Lord. They came up with that phrase by quoting the book of Genesis, when Lot is visited by two angels, and the townspeople from Sodom and Gomorrah stormed Lot's house and demanded that he send the two men out into the street so that the townspeople could have sex with them. Lot refused, and the angels blinded the townspeople and all escaped safely. And the evangelists are distorting this story to justify their own prejudice. Nowhere in the Bible is the word abomination used with connection to homosexuality. What God finds sinful is not homosexuality, it's rape. There's a big difference between rape and same-sex relationships. Rape is when you force yourself sexually on another person against their will, and having sexual relations with someone is an act of love. I'm going to jump back now into the first part of Genesis chapter 1. And this was on the sixth day of creation that God said, "Let us make mankind in our own image to be like us." Did you notice the plural pronouns? Let us make mankind in our own image to be like us. If you ever need to justify the existence of the Trinity, that's a good source of proof. But I want to concentrate on one word that's in that passage, and that's image. When we think of the word image, we think of something visible, something tangible, something physical. God is none of those things. God is a spirit. So what is the image of God that we were created into? The image is of love. Every time mankind fell out of favor with God, it was because we strayed from the path of love. If you prefer to love someone sexually of the same sex, God blesses that. We now live in a society that is stuck on old falsehoods, like homosexuality is a learned trait. It's an illness that can be cured. I read an article some time ago about a young lady who graduated from Chi High with honors, who was gay. And while she was at Chi High, the teachers and some of the counselors, who all happened to be members of the Chippewa Valley Bible Church, tried to shame her into changing her orientation. They wanted to cure her of her illness. She held strong against them, but I fear that she may have been discouraged about Christianity. I hope I'm wrong, but I haven't had a chance to talk to her. I asked her to look me up the next time she's in Chippewa, but apparently she isn't ready for that. I wish I could convince her to accept God's love and not be discouraged by bigoted right-wing evangelists who are believing an incorrect interpretation of the Bible. We've had to change some of our behavior around here at church too. What we were doing for years is no longer a good practice. When Barry Boyer was here and Bob Lindsley was a custodian, Barry would have Bob come in 2 hours before the worship service and turn on all the lights, adjust the thermostats, and open all the doors. I mean, all the doors, even the basement doors, were unlocked and welcoming. And we found out that it's not a good idea because we had people from the street come in the basement door by the clinic, and while we were in worship, they were in the kitchen helping themselves to food and money and whatever was in there. So we had to change that. And now we've even gone farther. Earlier this month, on a Wednesday afternoon about 1 o'clock, Winston was all alone in the building, and Tiffany was on vacation. And he was locking the doors and about to leave when a young lady asked if she could use the restroom. So Seeing a damsel in distress, the gentleman that he is, Winston said, "Of course," and pointed it out to her. The young man walked in with her and said he was with her. And while she was going to the restroom, the young man walked over to our vacuum cleaner, took out a knife and slit the hose, and making the vacuum cleaner inoperable. Winston said he was speechless in shock. He said for a brief moment he felt like putting a boot to the guy's head. But he just stood there in complete shock at the brazen act of destruction. About a week later, I was in church doing some paperwork, and around 1 or 11 o'clock, I was walking out. Winston was vacuuming by the ramp door using that great big heavy backpack vacuum cleaner. I asked him why he was using that, so he took me over to the industrial vacuum, commercial vacuum cleaner, and told me what had happened. And I took the vacuum cleaner to Badger State Vacuum where we got it. And it was kind of a serendipity that hose was severed the way it was, because as it turned out, the brushes were bad and they were just down to nubbins. So they replaced them. There was one of the bearings and a roller that was getting stiff. So they replaced that. And now, if you turn that vacuum cleaner on, you better hang on to it, because it's going for a ride. When I told Linda Butek what had happened, how the hose got severed, she said, "That doesn't make any sense. Why would a stranger come into church and brazenly do damage to church property?" And I told her that if she would have said that, if this would have happened prior to January 6th, I would have agreed with her. But there are a lot of white supremacists out there in our society that are looking for a reason to kill black people. If Winston would have been aggressive with that young man, he could have killed Winston and claimed self-defense, because Winston took the first punch. As a privileged white man, I cannot imagine living my life with that thought in mind, that you are a target for racial hatred. You need to be cautious about what you say or do around white folks. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream that someday his children would be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And I think we're further from that dream now than we were when Dr. King made that speech. This incident at the church with severing of the vacuum cleaner hose, January 6th, storming the Capitol, George Floyd murder, makes me wonder if the society is becoming worse and less loving. We had another incident recently that prompted tightening our security around here. A young man with a swastika tattoo walked into Tiffany's office and demanded that she give him money for a motel room. After some convincing, she finally convinced him that she didn't have any petty cash, and so he left. But Tiffany said she was very uncomfortable with him in the office. So this coming Thursday, September 2nd, Lieutenant Brian Mikolajczyk from the Chippewa Falls Police Department will be here at noon to talk to food pantry people, open door clinic, CareLink, and hopefully Winston will be here, and anyone else that would like to attend. and he's going to show us how to handle a stressful situation and how to let the police get in to negotiate a peaceful solution. It seems as if every year the world changes and we have to adapt to a different way of doing things. But just as I've said that, now I want Rich to play a YouTube video that contradicts everything I just said.
People think we're more divided as a country now than we've been in a long time. I know it can seem that way, but when I was a little kid in 1969, the Vietnam War was tearing the country apart. And they'd shot John F. Kennedy, and they'd shot Bobby Kennedy. They'd shot Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And there was the Manson family and the Zodiac Killer, and it just felt like the whole country had lost its mind. My father, who'd grown up in the Depression, well, his faith in humanity was just at a low ebb. And the two of us that June were driving from L.A. to Oakland in our old 1960 Oldsmobile, and a water pump blew out south of Bakersfield. And so this was long before cell phones, so we were about, well, we were going to have to hoof it like 9 or 10 miles into town when this young cowboy pulls up in a flatbed and offers to tow us in. All my dad had on him for money was this old Chevron gas card, so he kept telling this young fellow, you know, I can't pay you. And the young cowboy's looking at him like, yeah, I wasn't going to charge you. So he rolls us into town, and this is a Sunday, so nothing's open. So he has to go get his mechanic friend to open up his garage, and my dad says, hey, listen, I don't have any money. And the mechanic says, you know, we'll work something out. And then they all realize they don't have the actual part, so now they got to go roust out the local auto parts store owner, and they bring him down. And my father's like, okay, we need to talk about how this is all going to get settled, because he just couldn't imagine anybody being this trusting about the money. So the cowboy says, look at it, and make it feel better. I got a bunch of watermelons I need to get loaded onto my flatbed, and it's pretty hot work, and if you help me out, I'll pay for the part. So next thing you know, we're all unloading watermelons from inside a rail car. That's about 140 degrees. And 90 minutes later, we are soaked in sweat. And up rolls the car, just running like a top. And my dad says, I really don't know how to thank you fellas for this good turn. And we're turning to go, and the mechanic gets this look on his face and says, whoa, where do you think you're going? And you could see on my father's face just all the fear and distrust come to the surface. And he's stiffened like a leopard. And the mechanic says, no. My wife's going to make us all Sunday dinner, and you and the boy can get a shower and a clean shirt, and it'll make the drive easier, all of us. So we sat down for a dinner of fried chicken from the chicken right over there, and corn on the cob from the corn right over there. Man, I got to tell you, we'll never have a meal that good ever again. And my dad didn't say maybe three words the whole drive, but when we got home, I got into bed, and I was just about to turn off a light, and he stops in the doorway, and he says to me, no matter what you see in the movies or on TV or you read in the papers, you listen to me. That's how people really are. And about a month later, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. So keep the faith.
Keep the faith. Amen.